Help if I switch my cell phone. I wonder if you've ever been in a situation where you've met somebody or somebody's said something or somebody's done something or you've seen a picture and you say, oh, that takes me back. And something jogs a memory and you think, I'd forgotten that. But it all comes back to you and it becomes very vivid. I had an experience like that a number of years ago. I met a friend who I hadn't seen for a long time. He was somebody I had worked with, and we'd got on really, really well at work, but I hadn't seen him for, I think, about 8 or 10 years, and bumped into him, and he said, "No, that was really nice. We need to, let's get together again. Why don't you and your husband come for dinner with me and my wife?" And we made this arrangement. And kind of nervous, you know, when you haven't seen somebody for a long time, you don't know quite how it's going to go, and you wonder if they're going to be the same, or if it's going to be awkward, and Stuart never met them before, and... So I was getting ready to go, and Stuart was going straight from his work, and he'd never met these people before, and he said, "Now mind you, don't be late." And I was all ready, and then I remembered our puppy was really young, and I couldn't leave until I'd let the pup out for a pee. Well, I was dressed, my hair was done, my makeup was done, I had about 10 minutes to go, took the puppy out the back garden. She wanted to play. She wanted to eat the flowers. She wanted a ball. She wanted my attention. What she did not want was to pee. And I'm watching my watch, and it starts to rain. And time's gone on, and time's gone on. I'm later and later, but I cannot let this puppy back in the house before she's peed. This went on and on and on. God. 25 minutes. 25 minutes later, she finally clocked what it was I wanted her to do. Had a pee. I chucked her in the house, got in the car, drove like a bat out of hell. Colin says, staggered in, hair all over the place, makeup running off my face. I said, "Colin, I'm really, really sorry." Stuart's looking at me like, "I'm really, really sorry." I said, "You know, my puppy took 25 minutes to pee." 25 minutes? He says, "That's a long pee." And it all came back to me. When we worked together, I was the one that was always uptight. I was the one that was running around with a clipboard. He was the one that was dead laid back, never looked at a watch in his life. I was always the one, he was always the one that would make a joke. When I was getting tense, he would make a joke and take the sting out of it. It all came back to me. And in that moment, it was deja vu, and it was as if the relationship was right there back where it was before, like you sometimes get with an old friend and we had lost nothing. This incident at the end of John's Gospel is wonderful because, this passage we read, because it's full of thick echoes. It's full of things that have happened before in the story of Jesus. And what Jesus is doing, and John the Gospel writer is doing in this story, is he is bringing it all together. And he's bringing them to a new place. This is resurrection, but it's a new place that's drawing on where they've been before. And it's about renewing their calling. It's about sustaining them on the journey. And it's about giving them forgiveness for the things they've done wrong. So the first bit of the story, if you read, is about their calling. Because when you read this passage in John, you're probably already thinking, if you're familiar with the Gospels, you're probably already thinking, when I was reading that passage in John, I've read this somewhere before. And it is. It's in Luke, and it's in the other Gospels. It's the story of the calling of the first disciples. It's the story of when they were fishermen, they didn't know a thing about Jesus, they were getting on, minding their own business. And Jesus comes onto the shore, and like this time, they've been using their professional skills, they've been out there, they've been doing their best, they've been using their muscles, they're cold, they're hungry, and they've caught absolutely nothing. And somebody stands on the shore and says, "You've not caught anything. Can you not see? Can you not see?" Frustrated. And he says, "Look that way." And when they do as Jesus says, they get this net full of fish. And it must have come back to them. It must have been, it's all coming back to me now, when it happened to them then. And they dragged in this huge net. And they're thinking, this has happened before. This has happened before. And they're looking on the shore. And they're starting to think, I wonder if it's him, because this is really scary. They realised that when they did things by themselves. They sometimes got it right and they sometimes got it wrong, and this time they had failed. But Jesus could see things that they couldn't see. Jesus could give them the direction to do the right thing at the right time, and when they did what he said, it gave them the result, it gave them the fruit that they wanted. And Jesus, of course, had said to them after that first time, this net thing is just a picture. What I want you to do is come and follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. I want you to be part of God's mission in the world. I want you to be people who go out there in my name and who speak to people, love people, act in the world in a way that I do and that brings them to know me. I want you to be part of my mission. So this is what was happening in this, seeing it again. It's all coming back to me now. This idea that, well, Jesus has come back to life, but we don't know quite what's going to happen now. Jesus is saying, it's the same mission. It's the same thing. I want you to go and catch men. And it's the same thing for us that we need to be reminded as a church again and again, that our calling first to follow Jesus is to be part of what God is doing in the world. There's a lovely quote by somebody called David Bosch, who's written a book about mission, that says, it's not that the church of God has a mission in the world. It's that the God of mission has a church in the world. It's not that the church of God's got a mission in the world. It's not that we've got to do our hardest to get things done. It's that the God of mission has a church in the world. God is alive and active and working in the world, working in Canvas Line, working in this parish. How can we get alongside, get along with that, get energised by that and be part of what God is doing? And Jesus was reminding them of that, a new start. And they come out of that boat and they're probably thinking, this looks very familiar. And then they get to the second bit of the reminder. They've been reminded of their call. They've been reminded, and maybe that's for us again this morning, to think back, what was your call to follow Jesus? Did it come gradually? Did it come did you go to church from when you were a child and you started to know Jesus more and more and started to think, yes, I'm going to commit myself to follow him, and you maybe couldn't think of a time, or maybe it was a sudden thing that was an experience that you think, well, that was it, I decided. Or maybe it was a baptism, something that you felt yourself invited to be part of that mission. And Jesus is saying after the resurrection, it's coming full circle, you need to get back to that. And some of us are maybe still unpacking that, but that's the main call, follow me. And then he says, come, the second one. He says, come and have breakfast. And they get onto the beach and they realise that Jesus has lit a fire and he's cooking some fish. And he says, you bring what you've got. It's not that Jesus needs what they've got. Jesus has already got enough. He's cooking the fish. But he says, you bring what you've got. I want you to be part of this. And Jesus gathers them round a charcoal fire where the fish are cooking and he's got some bread. And the second, all coming back to me now moment, the second full circle, Jesus takes the bread and breaks it and gives it to them. Well, they can't have any doubt now, because how often did Jesus do that? Taking bread, breaking, giving it to people. He did it at the feeding of the 5,000, bread and fish. He did it at the Last Supper. He did it at the feeding of the 4,000. He did it just a week before at that Passover feast at the Last Supper when he took the bread and broke it and gave it to them as a picture of his body that was going to be broken for them. And that time it wasn't fish, it was wine. But this action of Jesus, take and break and share, brings it all back to them. It brings it back to them that Jesus has given himself in order to give them the food in their spirits to keep them going when things get really hard. And this is getting really hard because Jesus has come back from the dead, but they haven't got a clue what the future looks like. They haven't got a clue what's going to happen next. And Jesus is saying, let's get back to that. I've broken myself. I've given myself to you. I've always given you what you need. What they needed then, after a whole night's fishing, was a good warm a fire, something for their bellies, and something to dry them out. There is absolutely nothing unspiritual about those dead, obvious physical needs we have, bringing them to God. But there was a whole depth of other spiritual resonance going on here. Sustenance for the new journey, hungry and cold, rich symbolism. I wonder if you can go back again and ask yourself, was there a time you can remember where it was really tough and you had a real need, but Jesus came alongside you in a particular way, or someone was sent to be with you, or you had the right word at the right time for the right person and it kept you going? Maybe there was a communion service that was really poignant, really special for you. Those marker points in the journey of faith that God keeps us going and he keeps sustaining us. And Jesus said, right, look at this again. And again, we come today with today's needs. Jesus says, give us this day our daily bread. I wonder what gift or grace from God you might need today, just for today, to get you through the next week or to get you through the next 24 hours. What would you be asking Jesus? I need this for today. Might be patience. I need patience a lot. It might be wisdom for a difficulty that you're facing at work, or it might be grace to deal with somebody you're struggling with in your family. Or it might be comfort, thinking about the Duncan family and the loss of Moira. What's the grace we need right now to get us through the next bit? We can ask him to feed us. We can sit in our praying imagination round that charcoal fire and see Jesus' hands giving the bread and giving the fish and saying, take that and eat it. That's for you, for whatever you need. So he takes them back to their calling. He takes them back to how he has sustained them through. But there's another wee symbol in here, and it's a tricky one. And it's not for everyone in the group, these seven disciples plus Jesus round the charcoal fire on the beach. It's not for all of them. It's only for one. Because Simon Peter is sitting there, and he's remembering. I don't know if you've ever been in a group and everything's going fine and you've got your game face on and you're looking as if you belong and you're taking part in a conversation and you're desperately trying to fit in, but you know inside yourself something's wrong that these people don't know, and I'm trying to put on a face, but I don't really think I belong here in the same way that I belonged before. Peter was like that. Because the last time Peter sat round a charcoal fire, I was itching for Stuart to mention this in the children's talk and he didn't. We don't always coordinate all that well. When Peter was taken to the jail where Jesus was being held, he sat in a courtyard. And the Gospels tell us that the courtyard, it was a cold evening and the courtyard had a charcoal fire in the middle. And it was in that circle round the fire that Peter was asked three times, are you one of his? No. That was where it happened. And Peter is now sitting round a charcoal fire just 3 days later, thinking, the last time I sat round a charcoal fire, it wasn't like this. And I think Peter's got two things going on in him. He's delighted to see Jesus. We've seen him leaping out the boat like Peter always does and heading for the shore. He's delighted to see Jesus. But he's hiding his secret inside himself. I let Jesus down. I was the one that couldn't follow him when I said I would. I was the one that denied him when he needed me most. And the thing is, he thinks nobody knows. How would Andy know? Nobody else was there. We reckon, if you read the Gospels carefully, you reckon the Apostle John might have been there, which is possibly how he knows. But nobody else knows. And certainly, Jesus would have no way of knowing, would he? So Peter's got his game face on. And he's round the charcoal fire. But he's thinking. And Jesus never sweeps under the carpet the things that need to be said. the bits in us, the hurt, the bits of us that feel guilty, the bits of us that feel we've let him down or we've let ourselves down, we've let someone else down, he never glosses over that. But he also never goes to it hard and harsh. He never strips away the layers we've got to protect ourselves and leaves us bare. He does it so well. And he does it so well with Peter here. He doesn't want to humiliate him. But he needs to sort this. He needs to sort this. Otherwise, Peter will not be able to go on. If that had been me, I think I would have said to him, Peter, why did you do that? Why did you do that? And I would have wanted an explanation. Jesus doesn't go there. And I think if it had been me, the very least I would have wanted out of Peter, the very least would have been an apology. Look, can you not say you're sorry? Jesus doesn't go there either. It's really odd. He's gracious, but he's very direct. He says, Peter, do you love me? And Peter says, yeah, of course I love you. Then he says it again. Well, of course I do. And then he says it again. And by this time, the penny, I think, is starting to drop. Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? Because it's the only question that matters. Whenever I read this story about Peter, I think about something that happened to me, again, a number of years ago. And I can't remember if I've told you this story before, and I apologise if I have, but it's well worth telling again. I was in the Baptist church. I was in the Baptist church from when I was 20 to when I was about 30. And we had loads of young people in our church. And we had baptisms. And in the Baptist church, they baptised by immersion. We had a tank in our church. And they stand people in the tank and tip them down and bring them back up. And they're wholly wet. And that is because in the Baptist church, people are not baptised as babies. They're baptised when they can confess their own faith in Jesus. And that is the start of their new life. We had a child in our church, a wee girl who was about 11, but she had Down syndrome. She was called Ailsa, and everybody in the church really loved her. Ailsa had a mental age probably of about 5 or 6. And her mum and dad brought her to church every Sunday, and she loved coming to church. And she had a really special relationship with our minister. Our minister was called Brunton Scott. He was a wonderful, wonderful man. And he would just meet Ailsa and give a big hug. You know what Down's children are like? They're so open and affectionate. And Ailsa had said once or twice to her mum and dad that she wanted, that why don't I get baptised? But nobody had ever taken her very seriously, because they didn't really know if she knew what she was talking about. And we had a tradition in the church that when Brunton baptised people, he would stand down the baptistry and he would get them to say, do you confess that Jesus is your Saviour and Lord? And they would say, yes, I confess that Jesus is my Saviour and Lord. And he would say, and you'll never say a finer thing than that. That was his wee catchphrase. You'll never say a finer thing than that. And one evening, Brunton got a phone call, and Ailsa's mum was on the phone. She says, Brunton, you need to come round. And he went round and he went upstairs. And Ailsa had run the bath, and she was baptising her dolls. And she was ducking them under. Do you say that Jesus is your Saviour and Lord? She was ducking them under the water, and she said, and you'll never say a finer thing than that. And everybody got, they said, look, we really need to do something about this. We really need to do something about getting Ailsa baptised. What are we going to do? And the next baptismal service was huge. There were about 11 or 12 young people being baptised. And Ailsa was last. And during the service, I was watching, and hundreds of people were there, and I was watching as the youngsters made their confession of faith. And it was quite, they were asked, do you renounce the world, the flesh, and the devil? Do you confess Jesus as your Saviour and Lord? Do you promise? It was a beautifully rich, complete, three-part confession of faith before they were baptised. It was lovely. But I was thinking, and I bet I'm not the only person that was thinking, how on earth is Ailsa going to cope with all of that? And will she understand? And Ilse was last, and she went down into the baptism tank, and the minister was standing there, and she gave him a big hug. The two of them stood in the tank, and they were hugging each other. And Brunton said, "Ilse, do you love Jesus?" And Ilse said, "Yes." And he said, "You'll never say a finer thing than that." And she was baptized. And that was enough. That was enough. Do you love Jesus? Jesus says, "Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me?" Do you know, see all this stuff about why did you do it and did you say sorry and how do you feel about it and give me an explanation? It just doesn't go there. It doesn't go. Not that it's not important and that stuff has its place. But on that time, do you love me? And when Simon Peter said three times, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you," Jesus said each time, "That's you, you're right, you're forgiven." And he doesn't only say you're forgiven in the sense that I'm going to forget what you did because it's been put right. He says, "I'm giving you your job back." It's full restitution. It's not half and half. He says, "I'm giving you your job back, and here's what it is you have to do, because here is your task. You are going to be commissioned." And I sometimes think we make things really complicated in church, and sometimes think that what Jesus wants from us is, "Do you love me? Do you love me? Because if you do, then whatever it is that's bothering you might need to be sorted, but it's not the most important thing." Takes you right back to the core of it and says, "You can go on. You can go on now, and I'll give you all the strength you need to go on. You've got your job back." And then he says to Peter, right at the end of that, all of that, he takes him right back to the beginning and says, "Now, follow me. You're not a wee boy anymore. You're not a wee fisherman boy that doesn't know what he's talking about and that doesn't know what it means to be a follower. You're a man. You've been through the wars. You know what it means. But now, follow me." And it's deja vu. It's back to the beginning. But it's back to the beginning to take the relationship on in a new way, because Peter is not quite the same person as he was before, and he knows what it means to follow Jesus. Some of us are still unpacking that call, follow. What does it mean to follow Jesus in 2018 and in Canvas Lang? That is a hard question. Together as a church, we need to unpack what that means. Some of us have heard that call many, many times before. And maybe we're fed up, or maybe we're tired, or maybe we're just a bit... And Easter is all about the new life and the new start. Whatever stage of the journey we're at, it's about the net that helps us to remember our first call. It's about the bread that helps us to remember that Jesus gave himself to keep us going. And it's about the fire. It's about the fire that says, even in the testing and the hard place, "I'll see you through that. Because if you love me, you can continue to follow me." Let's take a minute to think, and then we'll pray.